Today's Taisho is on case one in Mumonkan, Joshu's Mu. A monk asked Joshu, "Has a dog the Buddha nature?" Joshu answered,
"Mu."
Mumon's comment, "In order to master Zen, you must pass the barrier of the patriarchs. To attain the subtle realization, you must completely cut off the way of thinking. If you do not pass the barrier and do not cut off the way of thinking, you will be like a ghost clinging to the bushes and weeds." Now I want to ask you, what is the barrier of the patriarchs? What is so important about the single word Mu? Why is this the gate of Zen? If you pass through this gate, you will not only see Joshu face to face, but you will also go hand in hand with all the teachers, entangling your eyebrows with theirs, seeing with same eyes, hearing with same ears. That sounds delightful. Wouldn't you like to pass this barrier? Then arouse your entire body with its 360 bones and joints and 84,000 pores of the skin and summon up a spirit of great doubt and concentrate on this word Mu. Carry it continuously, day and night. Do not form any conception or ideas about it. It will be just as if you have swallowed a red-hot iron ball, which you cannot spit even if you tried hard. All the illusionary ideas and delusive thoughts accumulated up to the present time will be exterminated, and when the time comes, external and internal will be united. You will know this, but for yourself only, like a dumb man who has had a dream. All of a sudden, an explosive conversion will occur, and you will astonish the heavens and shake the earth. It will be as if you have snatched the great sword of Jurnal Khan and are holding it in your hand. When you meet the Buddha, you kill the Buddha. When you meet the ancestors, you kill them. On the brink of life and death, you command perfect freedom. Among the sixfold worlds and four modes of existence, you enjoy a playful samadhi. Now I want to ask you again, how will you carry this out? Employ every ounce of your energy to work on this Mu. If you hold on without interruption, behold, a single spark and the holy candle is lit. Mumon's verse, the dog, the Buddha nature, the pronouncement, perfect and final. Before you say it has or has not, you are a dead man on the spot. How's the weirdness level going? First, people scream when they go for interviews. You chant these weird syllables. They don't seem to mean anything. And then a passage is read, which is all sounds violent. I know of folks who just arrived last night. This is your first day, and it might be raw. I know meditating in nature always helps, but in some ways it's like tiring. You got up at 4:30, and I'm pretty sure parts of you feel like, oh, this is a blur. Where is this going? Yeah? No? Good. For many of us, this is day four. And I can't wait to hear how everyone's morning sit was, but mine was like a golden thread. I wouldn't reveal the names ever, but someone I was talking to someone and they said, oh, this is like melting gold, melting gold. But by the fourth day, I can't wait. I really can't wait for third, fourth, fifth day morning sits. They are like, when I'm there, it feels like I would do anything to come back to this state of mind. It's just undescribable, just so beautiful. And I, with my whole heart, pray that every human being gets to taste that. I truly believe our world would be different if we could keep on tasting that. So I want to talk about this very fundamental koan. Yesterday, my beloved partner and husband talked about first koan in Hekigan Roku. And these really do, they are like, you know, brothers, sisters, these two koans to each other. We are talking about first koan, first paradoxical story in Zen literature, in many collections, many traditions. This is the very first thing you work on after you have worked with breath. Yeah. So, you know, several people came in yesterday. I checked in and I said, what are you going to do? And I'm curious to hear how things actually went. But we talked about just focusing on the out breath and counting our breath. Yeah. And I can imagine, if I think of my first sesshin, you guys were brilliant. My first sesshin, you know, I went to sesshin in some ways because Imtiaz was there. I met my Zen teacher, my first teacher, and Imtiaz on the same day. And Imtiaz was practicing very diligently at the time. And I just like to hang out with Imtiaz. And he would meditate, and so I followed him along. And I, you know, he said, oh, I'm signing up for this meditation retreat. I had done a few half-day sits, and I said, I'll sign up too. And I went there. It was like a shock to my system. By third day, I heard some people doing some yelling in the interview room. But by third day, our teacher didn't have this habit of explaining anything, right? I had no clue why these people are screaming. And I went third day, I was so exhausted. I just went there and I just screamed. I had no context. Like, I don't want this thing called enlightenment. Get me out of here. And he was just so kind. He didn't say too much, but just with his eyes, he said, I totally understand where you are. And it's totally natural. And how could it be anything else? You know, and that retreat was all a blur for me. Even fourth, fifth day, it was a blur for me. But when I got back from that retreat, I was bouncing. There was this bounce I had not known I could ever have. It's like, what just happened? I was exhausted the whole time. And I would look at people across from me, and, you know, it included Imtiaz, but there were other members of our Sangha who had been practicing for many, many years. And they would just sit like rock. It's like, I would feel so small, and I would compare myself, and I'm never going to have a sane mind. I am doomed. And I would actually in my sits pray, I will make up these stories. I hope they will move now. I hope they will move now. Like, you know, whenever the bell rang, I would see
who's opening up their legs first? It really was like that. It was like, oh, even Kurt moved. Our first teacher's name is Kurt. Oh, even Kurt moved. Oh my God, I am okay. People move. But after the retreat, I was hooked. I was hooked for life. And I can't describe it in words because it didn't make any sense. I was tired, exhausted. My mind was there is a roar, which is the pure roar of moo. But there is a roar which is just like tumultuous. It's like, my insides were turned over and over in me with so many hard memories. This was hard. So, now I can look back and say, well, what was happening? Why did I feel a sense of liberation even when I was so tired? And, the purpose of Zen, forget these complicated, weird things like moo or not. The purpose of any contemplative tradition, this doesn't have anything to do with Zen or Buddhism, Asia, India, forget all of that. Any contemplative tradition, the basic fundamental goal is seeing reality as it is. Seeing reality as it is. Yeah? We'll talk about other aspects of this reality, right? The what we call the spiritual reality, right? And on and on. But the fundamental reality that needs to be faced in our times is all of our internalized stress and trauma and woundedness. We've been talking about it this retreat. The first few days we talked about how each of us is carrying not just stressors of our own life, but the stresses and traumas of our sisters and brothers and parents and cousins and friends. There is this intergenerational trauma that when one person in a family drinks, how it affects everyone else. Or when person commits suicide, how it affects everyone. And how the system of patriarchy and sexism and neoliberal economy and all of those systems that are operating around us, they create trauma that gets passed on from one generation to another. So the one part, regardless of where we are in our practice, if we have practiced for 2 minutes or 20 years, we have to continually see the reality of the trauma as it is. Yeah. So that was my teacher nodding at me. I totally understand where you are. How could it not be? When we've gone through so much, the medicine tastes bitter. It feels tiring. As we sit, especially if this is your first day here, or it happens, things are circular. That it's not like a straight path to nirvana, as they say, right? Even if it's your fourth day, things might have still come up this morning that felt like, oh, where did that come from? And whatever comes up, I've spoken about this before, whatever comes up, one of our fundamental tools is our attitude. We gotta be just this utterly sincere, loving, kind, grandmotherly friend to anything that comes up. The hope is that the retreat environment
and my and Imtiaz's facilitation and other people who've practiced for a while, they create a safe environment for everyone. But even more important than that external environment is what we are feeding to our own selves. No matter what comes up, no matter what comes up, please be kind to it. Watch it fully, completely. It wants to be seen. What we push down becomes more trauma, more shame. The fundamental bigger nature of reality that we are trying to touch and embody and see and live with is like a clear blue sky. Okay, clear blue sky. And clear blue sky is always there regardless of how many clouds there are. Okay? But you know, when the clouds are really dark and heavy, they need to be released as rain. Do you see where this is going? When the clouds are dark and heavy and just all over the place, and there is no way to get a glimmer of clear blue sky being visible, we need to shed some tears. We need to grieve. Otherwise, those clouds become calcified. They get stuck. So, emotions will come up. Everything that comes up is welcome. We are developing our capacity to keep watching whatever comes up. And sometimes it will feel like we are breaking down. We can't hold it together. That's why we have a community. We have a circle of friends. Even if we are not speaking to them, everyone has gone through it, is going through it. There is unspoken solidarity. Some of us had spoken solidarity that we generated through doing our grief circle. But even if we haven't spoken to each other, I know, I passed through it. So I hope everyone who's new feels like, knows, I am verbalizing it on behalf of the whole group, we are rooting for you. You are not alone. We are doing it for each other because we are so interconnected, so interdependent, so interbeing. The trauma you are carrying is my trauma, and what I am carrying is yours. And you're coming here, what a gift to everyone. So one thing we have to remind ourselves to feel safe. It's very important. And then breathe deeply. Okay. Even if you didn't believe in anything Zen literature says, what is this thing called Mu? Sense of safety, internal safety, and deep breathing, abdominal breathing, are two fundamental things that calm us down, that calm down our brains. Okay, just pure science, no Asian Zen Buddhist mumbo jumbo. Pure science, sense of safety, feeling like we can be heard in this environment if we really needed to say something, and breathing deeply. And as Imtiaz reminded us, you know, even when I'm talking, my own eyes closed, you are totally welcome to keep your eyes closed and keep working with your hara. Keep breathing deeply. If you're feeling tired, you don't have to, but abdominal breathing activates our vagus nerve. It's almost like people always say we have one brain. We actually have three brain-like structures in our body. One is where we all know it is. A tiny one is in our heart. And the third one is what we call Dantian or Tanden or Hara, about 1.5 to 2.5 inches below our navel, depending on our height. So when you breathe from hara,
you activate that vagus nerve, and it's you know, when we get used to breathing from here, it's almost immediately calming. I use this analogy sometimes. You know how there are babies and they are just going wah 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 wah, and then mothers and parents come and they swaddle them. And not all, but some babies immediately calm down. So the impact of breathing from Hara is a little bit like that. It's just like immediately calming. So now let's talk about this thing called Mu, okay? It's a fundamental koan in Zen tradition. First koan, it's called the gateway to anything else that Zen tradition might have to offer. And the koan here says, a monk, a practitioner of Buddhist meditation practice, asked Joshu. Joshu is one of the most important teachers in Zen tradition. And monk asked Joshu, has a dog Buddha nature? You know, he, modernizing this koan, he might have as well asked, does dog have skin? Does dog breathe? It's like, it's asking very obvious question in some ways. There is no magic in this question. The point is, in other words, it's like, does the dog have universal energy? Maybe that's a better fit. Does the dog have universal energy that permeates the whole universe? Okay? Of course, yes. But the answer Joshu gives, the answer Joshu gives is not yes or no. Joshu says, Mo.
Mo.
It's like demonstrating the energy, not saying yes and no. Demonstrating it. When you hear those yell, when I ask people in Dokusan room who are working on Mu Koan to try, say it, or they say it themselves, they have emptied their mind enough to see if they open their mouth, the energy will pour through. I used a phrase here that needs some unpacking. See, I said, you know, blue sky is always there regardless of how many clouds there are. Yeah? And when enough clouds have become water or rain, right? The blue sky is clear. We can see it. That's what I mean by still mind, right? Where we have worked through, we can never work through all of our clouds. They're always going to be there. Always. Anyone who claims they've taken care of all of their clouds, say hello, give them a hug, and don't take too many other things seriously. We say that Buddha had complete enlightenment. Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. That's the word for complete enlightenment. No traces left of any greed, any illusion, any trauma, anything. But for all the practitioners I have met in my life, certainly including myself, all my teachers, all mentors, they carry clouds. But when we work through a lot of our clouds or some big clouds, it's like there is a window and we can see the clear blue sky, right? In that clear, still blue sky mind, when people are close to that, or I have a sense that they are beginning to touch it, then we say, okay, let's open our mouth. That you are in a still place. Now maybe the universal energy will pour through you. Does that make sense? And it doesn't pour through. I mean, there are when I call Mu, you know, the thinking part of my mind is thinking, oh gosh, what will happen now? It doesn't always come. It's not that it's gonna, just because it opened up one time, every time I'm gonna open my mouth, it's going to be the voice of the universe. But the chances become more. More we practice and keep working on our clouds and not neglect them, continue to be friends with clouds, and know the patterns of our mind, the chances become more and more. And in clouds, I wanted to differentiate between two kinds of clouds. You know, one are those heavy, dark. Imtiaz always is telling me different species of cloud names, and I can never remember them. But you know those. You can imagine those really dark. Give me a name, Imtiaz. Cumulonimbus. Right. Right? Those heavy, dark clouds, they really need some grief work, let's say. They really need some deep work, maybe therapy. Okay? And then there are these, you know, wispy clouds. Those, like, just that make these weird shapes in the sky, and they just like to swirl around. Like, it's not something big, but they're just swirling around. They are like our patterns. These are the stories that we get into, right? And they might have a deep cause too, but they are like, they just like to cloud the sky. You know, they're just wisps. Those can use the work. So those are the clouds when we work with our hara. They can be worked with easily. Okay? See, what I'm saying is, if this is your first full day of any retreat, or even if it's not, you know, when we do deep breathing, focus on our hara, I've always said, you know, breathe in, your belly fills up with air. As you breathe out, focus on your hara, watch where your breath goes as you're breathing out, and either call Mu or count 1, 2, and keep watching that space between out breath and in breath, right? This kind of breathing with hara can be really, really, really effective with those wispy clouds, those stories, those little wisps that are circulating around. So we keep doing that. Where Mu can not be as helpful, or hara work cannot be as helpful, is when we come across those big, heavy, dark clouds. Yeah? And that's where our attitude and help from a facilitator and community can be very useful. So, where are we at? A monk asked Joshu, "Has a dog the Buddha nature?" Joshu answered, I will not read the commentary again, but if you remember, the sense of it is the most important few lines that I like to read is, arouse your entire body with its 660 bones and joints and 84,000 pores of the skin.
Summon up a spirit of great doubt. Great doubt here means great curiosity. We can't take anyone's word for it that there is something like universal energy that can flow through our bodies and our voice. But if we have curiosity, that can be very helpful. When people are working with their hara, when they're really working with their hara, touching that blue sky, clear mind, at its peak, the phrase used to describe that state of mind is great death. Great death. And the point is that you've kind of parted the clouds enough for that time period that what we usually associate with being alive is dead. When people fall into that clear blue sky state of mind, our sense of body doesn't exist. Our sense of mind doesn't exist. It's like called die on the cushion. We die on the cushion to reveal the bigger mystery. Yeah, those are heavy loaded words, great death. But it's really true. It's really true. And the point I want to make is that we can't tell when we are practicing on the cushion, watching our hara, watching our out breath, we can't tell that we have died on the cushion. It's almost like you can't tell when you are having a deep sleep that you are sleeping. It's the next day when you get up refreshed that you say, ah, I had a good night's sleep. So when people come into interview room and I ask, how was your day? It's usually easy to tell who's been able to sit still and, you probably focused on your hara. But what I'm trying to fish for is, what else happened? It's like I'm looking for signs of great death. I'm looking for, even if it's not the complete absence of body sensations or mind movement, I'm looking for signs that you slept well. Right? Not the sleeping, but like the work on the cushion. I'm trying to see if you touched, if you had glimpses of blue sky mind. Because when you first have glimpses, you almost don't notice them. It's like it's there, but we are so used to living under clouded conditions that we've forgotten what the blue sky is. Like that peak that we were, the mountain peaks that we were watching this morning, they are so glorious. They've always been here. And for the last 3 days, we didn't have such a clear view. So when you think about, when we are coming to the interview room, say more, because when you have died, or when I am in deep concentration, I really can't tell at that time. I can only tell it later. Sometimes I have great sits, fourth, fifth day of sesshin. Please don't try to find it in your own self, because everyone's experience is unique. But I have a beautiful, delicious, sweet taste in my mouth after a few days of meditation. I don't get it out, I don't get it outside of retreats. But at retreats, different retreats, might be different days, like, it's just like fragrant sweetness in my mouth. So the last part that I want to touch today is, why is this important for us, given that we are in this time, 21st century, where we are a civilization ready to kill ourselves literally because of changing climate. We are so torn apart. We don't have a sense of healthy communities. We certainly, you know, people on the left can't speak to people on the right. People on the right can't understand, still can't understand why Black Lives Matter needs to be a slogan in these times. On and on and on, right? There's a beautiful, beautiful human being I had the privilege of getting to know last December through this new network that I have come to be associated with, Mickey Kashtan. And I was reading something she wrote and it just like, oh, it makes perfect sense. Thank you. What she was saying there was, you know, all of these what we call causes of oppression. Some people say systems of oppression or systems of dominance. I'll explain what I mean by that. So for example, it's true in all parts of the world, but I know India the best. Indian society is deeply sexist. If you give birth to a son, your status in the family goes up. Women leave their house and go stay with men at men's place. Girls are not given education, on and on. So women can't be fully human. They can't fully touch their true potential. And it continues to be true. I know so many of my friends who got engineering degree, PhD degrees with me and are married into Indian families. It's just shocking for me to see what they go through, okay? You see where this is going? So that there's a sexism and patriarchy, one system of dominance where women can't be fully human. We could say this for heteropatriarchy or heterosexuality versus, queerness. We could say this about global north versus global south, race. All of this at its core, and this is what Mickey said, which was like, oh, this is so zen. This makes complete sense. All of this is based on separating and then controlling. See? Whatever that I am not, I am not Imtiaz, right? I am not Rosie. I am not Sunshine. And when I have that sense of separation from these people, that's when the impulse to control the other arises. And Zen's fundamental gift to the universe at this time, it has always been true, but it feels so much needed at this time, is this work with clear blue sky mind and then letting the mountain explode from there. It's like touching the very still mountain, and then that still mountain then explodes from with universal energy. What you get, what you touch there is deep unity. I mean, unity is just such a word. It means nothing. But when you truly experience it, there truly is not two. not two, not separate. When something is not separate, how will we ever dream of controlling it? So this is just my prayer that somehow this practice thing is hard. It's very hard to get us to touch first some stillness and then that sense of unity. But when we do, and if we do it in the context of a healthy culture where the spiritual tradition itself is not abusing people and hurting people and creating its own systems of dominance, it's such a gift that we need in these times. The dog, the Buddha nature, the pronouncement, perfect and final. Before you say it has or has not, you are a dead man on the spot. See, this dead man is referring to that great death I was talking about.